I think the hero's journey itself, right, the kind of traditional story structure is itself somewhat circular. The idea is that the hero begins in a status quo, goes on a journey, and returns in some way to a new status quo, right? New but similar status quo. And so I think that's like level one of circular storytelling. And then, yeah, we're just going to complicate it. I do think there's like a second, maybe a third level where like when I think of like what makes a circle, like why is a circle not a triangle? Why is a circle not a square? And I think one of the essential aspects of a circle is that from any given point on a circle, you are seeing the exact same thing, right? If we're all standing in a circle, you're seeing the same, I'm not a geometrist, radii, circumference, whatever, right? It looks the same from any point you're at. And I think that's like the holy grail of circular storytelling. If you can tell a story where at any point in the story, there is a sense like that moment is a microcosm of the entire story. That to me is like next level elite circular storytelling.
What is up, everybody? You're listening to episode 95 of SFF Addicts. I'm your host, Adrian M. Gibson, and welcome to your weekly dive into the world of science fiction, fantasy, and writing craft. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, the Chewie to my Han Solo, the Joker to my Commander Shepard, my dear MJ Kuhn. How are you?
I am doing lovely. How are you?
Doing fantastic. And I'm just going to pimp my girl's books because she's the best. And first up is Blue Bebe Among Thieves, the first in the Tales of Tamora duology. And then the next one is The Green Baby, Thick Ass Thieves. And if you're going to review it on Goodreads, please put Thick Ass Thieves so MJ knows you're a listener of the show.
Yes, that is how I know if it's someone from the show. It's when they say Thick Ass Thieves and they talk about it.
I love
it. But yes, buy my books, feed my cat.
Yeah, feed MJ and her cat.
Well, yeah, me too, but most importantly, the cat.
Yeah. Hi, Thorin. As well, you can look forward to my debut novel, Mushroom Blues, which is out when this episode airs next week. I can't fucking believe it. But if you're in the mood for mushrooms and body horror and police procedurals and all that kind of stuff, then you're going to be in
and for a fruiting good time. Bodies. And
fruiting bodies, which is MJ's favorite combination
my
of words.
My favorite turn of phrase. That's sarcasm. I love Mushroom Blues, but I do hate the phrase fruiting bodies.
And I use it so many times in the book, and I'm not sorry at all. It's just so it's expressive.
It's perfect. Well, I was going to say, it's perfect for expressing exactly what you're trying to express. It's just unsettling.
Yeah, and that's the whole
which
point.
It's supposed to be.
Yeah, because just body's fruit. That's what happens. As well, a quick note for anyone out there listening or watching, the official SFF Addicts Patreon and merch store are live, so check the links in the description to support what we do here. Also, don't forget to rate and review the podcast on your favorite podcast app and subscribe to the FanFiatic YouTube channel where this and every other episode of the show is available in full video. And now joining us once again is Moses Osei Utomi, author of The Lies of the Ajungo, Daughters of Aduma, and The Truth of the Eleke. How's it going, Moses?
Going too well. It's going the best. Can't complain.
Right on. I love this positivity. We're all good. Fruiting bodies, too well. Life is good.
Right.
Heads up, this is part two of our two-part chat with Moses, so I recommend checking out part one to get to know him better. Today, though, we're going in circles as we chat about circular storytelling. Before we dig deeper into the episode, a quick word from our sponsor. Novello is an exciting new publishing and reading platform whose goal is to be the go-to for all things writing and storytelling. Their platform offers an intuitive, user-friendly way for writers to create and share their awesome stories for readers to enjoy, all while maintaining total control over their stories. Everything from the content to cover art and pricing is all controlled by the story's author. Novello also offers social features such as message boards, direct messaging, and a news feed where you can post updates to your followers. With future plans including support for comics and a marketplace for users to sell other writing-related services, the future of this platform is looking bright. And the best part? It's all available for free. No sign-up fees, no membership, just a growing library of epic tales. Sign up now to bask in the magic of books, where you can enjoy tales like Blackwater, an epic adventure by an award-winning author, or Limbo, The Door Above the Lake, a terrifying battle for survival. Whether you're a casual reader or a professional writer, Novello is the place for you. Visit them at novello.com. That's N-O-V-E-L-O.com. And now, enjoy the rest of this episode of SFF Addicts. And to kick this off, can you give a bit of an overview of what circular storytelling means?
Yes. I think there's a few levels to it, and we'll get into it more, but I really think the idea, the base idea, is that in some way, the story returns to where it started from. That could be, that can look a lot of different ways. It can look like the literal setting, right? They go back to the Shire. It can look like the emotional state. The character goes on a journey, but gets back to where they're at. But I think in general, that's typically how it's accepted. And I do want to like complicate that as we go on today, but that's, I think it's a general acceptance of like circular storytelling.
I'm fully on board for complication.
Yeah, right. Well, I love that. I honestly love that approach in general. Is like start broad and then like, you know, get to the nitty-gritty stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned coming back to the Shire, but just, you know, what are some other solid examples of circular storytelling in, you know, books, film, TV, anything you've seen, just to kind of paint that broad picture for us?
We might need to get into the complications earlier than I thought. So I think like...
We're diving in.
Yeah. All right. Let's dive in. So I think the hero's journey itself, right? The kind of traditional story structure is itself somewhat circular. The idea is that the hero begins in a status quo, goes on a journey, and returns in some way to a new status quo, right? New but similar status quo. And so I think that's like level one of circular storytelling. And then, yeah, we're just going to complicate it. I do think there's like a second, maybe a third level where like when I think of like what makes a circle? Like, why is a circle not a triangle? Why is a circle not a square? And I think one of the essential aspects of a circle is that from any given point on a circle, you are seeing the exact same thing, right? If we're all standing in a circle, you're seeing the same, I'm not a geometrist, radii, circumference, whatever, right? It looks the same from any point you're at. And I think that's like the holy grail of circular storytelling. If you can tell a story where at any point in the story, there is a sense like that moment is a microcosm of the entire story. That to me is like next level elite circular storytelling. We can at some point discuss that, but that's just kind of the way I divide it. The hero's journey and then the more like whatever type.
Yeah.
No, that's okay. This is getting my mind churning and I'm really excited.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm like digesting okay. That. I love that idea.
Yeah. Cause yeah. It's kind of cool. It's like, yeah, you're looking at like the basically like, the circumference is like the story as a whole. And then the diameter is even like you're at any specific point on the circle and you're able to look across the circle to a different point in the story. And there's kind of like this constant.
Right. You're seeing the same thing.
Yeah. These like reflections of the story from different parts of the story. And it's right. Just like the ultimate form of meta narrative, mm-hmm. Essentially. You mentioned the hero's journey, and I was wondering if there are other storytelling traditions or other sort of like forms of narrative that you can think of or you have drawn upon when it comes to the circular method.
Yeah, I think the hero's journey is like a very broad concept. Like of course it's been like pinned down in specific ways as applied to storytelling, but I think the idea itself of like a figure venturing out from safety into the unknown and returning to a form of safety is like maybe it's like most basic form. I could not cite like a specific. I mean, I know like act structure, like 3-act and 5-act and Kishō Tenketsu, and there's a Chinese equivalent to that. And like, but I think even those are like kind of can be sub governed by the like primordial hero's journey, like a very basic like. Caveman leaves cave, comes back with pelt. Boom, we got a hero, you know? I think the other kind of structures of story kind of, I think, can exist under that.
Yeah, I like that because it's like, we talked with Ronnie Verdi about this last year, but the hero's journey and so many storytelling traditions are rooted in mythology and rooted in traditions that go back thousands and thousands of years and permeate different cultures in this sort of cross-pollination of narrative. And you're mentioning last episode about like the mythology of Nigeria, and I wanted to kind of get your take on if there are any storytelling traditions from Nigeria that kind of use this, but also your views on circular storytelling in mythology, because I think mythology, if you go back to some of the oldest stories, like the Epic of Gilgamesh, if you right. even look at the Bible and yeah. a lot of the stories that are within the Bible, there are so many stories that are rooted in this circular method where right. the parable is kind of dependent on the return as much as it is on the journey as a whole.
Right. Yeah. I don't have terms to give. I mean, I think I kind of mentioned last episode, my interaction with Nigerian storytelling is like it's non-academic, right? So like it's limited to my experiences of Nigerian storytellers, most often my dad and his friends. So like, I wish I could have like a term to use or like a framework, but I really do think like it gets at like why stories exist and what is the essential purpose of stories. And I think that's really like, it's a very, very deep, deep human thing. I like to think of stories like the algorithm of the human mind. Like that is fundamentally how we learn and how we think and how we process and grow. And so like, I think stories, when I write stories and when I think about stories, I think like, well, this tradition predates me by infinity, right? There was at some point a human storyteller way before there was a human engineer or a human gardener. And that person had a really important role, which is to relay the truth, some truth about the world to the tribe, to the band, to the group, so that they can better operate and live in the world. And so I think in that sense, it has to be circular because again, it's somebody left and came back. If somebody left, there's no story to tell. They left and never returned. Like they didn't get a story. The story that we tell is that if you leave, you die, right? But if somebody's returned with something important about the world and that there's berries that we can eat over there or that there's a stream that we can access, now you inherently have that structure of the flight and the return. I think that's kind of, to me, where that idea comes from.
Yeah. I think this whole thing, I'm digesting this whole thing. It's changing my like perception of the hero's journey and yeah, I'm loving this. So I want to talk a little bit about circular storytelling, particularly as it relates to the Forever Desert novellas. So, you know, I want to talk about how that shows up in The Lies of the Ajungo and The Truth of the Eleke. And, you know, how did this kind of circular nature of the narrative work to help you meet the goals that you wanted, you know, of the story you wanted to tell with those novellas?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't want to spoil anything because I think it's not done in, you know, a circle. It's only a circle when it's complete or something equally smart sounding. So like, I do think though that even by the second book, you're starting to see certain structures or names or places or ideas repeat. And I think one of the values of, I think one of the things circular story structure can do, especially when it comes to the hero's journey, is show change and how change functions. I think that's one of the main reasons that you have the person return often to the same place they're at, or have them, even if they go to a different place, they're returning to something similar. So you're getting to see the contrast of what they were and what they are, or where they were and where they are. And I think that's one of the things I was excited about doing in the Forever Desert on a kind of like macro scale, millennial scale, where some things that were very innocuous 500 years ago are now very scary sounding or dangerous 500 years later, some things and vice versa. And that's like, to me, a really fun way of looking at change, of change over time, or even if something, and if some things don't change, but the context changes. And that makes it feel different, whether to the reader or to the people in the world. That was the main driver. And at the same time, I think if I'm thinking, I'm still thinking of level two storytelling. It's level two circular storytelling. That's like my favorite thing in the world. Now we'll talk about it more, but like if you've replicated the circle in like a literal way of each point is a reflection of other points, you can also say something really important about what doesn't change, right? Is that, you know, if your story, each component of your story is the same as the other components, right? And then the ending point is really no different from the beginning in a meaningful way. I think you've created a great commentary on how certain things about humanity don't change and what that means. And I think that's one of the benefits of kind of that second structure, really honing in on what a circle means, is that it's hardest to do that, I think, with the hero's journey because so much changes. And that's the point of it. But I think the other avenue gives a route to show, like, yeah, some things don't change. That's also important to note.
Yeah, because it's like, I mean, in the context of the hero's journey, the individual can change, but the world itself might not change.
Right.
And so it's kind of like two circles laid on top of each other. Or in like, mm-hmm. in the case of The Lies of the Ajungo and The Truth of the Aleke, it's like, I almost kind of think of it as like a Venn diagram.
Yeah.
Where there are these circular stories, but there are multiple points at which they intersect. And the points of intersection are kind of like the ways in which history repeats itself, or the ways in which the modern, you know, like the modern culture is influenced, whether through oral storytelling or through cultural evolution, by the events of the first book. And so it's kind of like this Venn diagram exists as a conversation between these different circles, and one without the other loses a lot of its potency. And I think the reason that these two novellas, even though they're short, they have so much of an effect, and that punch that you were mentioning last episode about like the novella format, is the fact that they have so much interrelated dialogue with one another. And The Truth of the Aleke would be a lot less if it wasn't drawing from that history of The Lies of the Ajungo and twisting it. That dialogue doesn't necessarily have to be the truth. You know, it can be the truth in the context of that story, but for anyone who has read, you know that it is a manipulation of the truth and a manipulation of history. And so that even kind of deepens the effect that it has.
Yeah, I mean, you said that better than I could. Thanks. I mean, that's very much what I was playing with, and it I think shows the value of like the circle as a way of creating meaning. It's kind of like when you revisit your childhood home as an adult, and you're like, my bed was so small, you know, like it. And then you think like you're seeing, especially if you're a parent or you're an adult, and like you can imagine what it was like for your parents to pick you up out of bed, and how when you're a kid, you're just like this like floppy, like I'm experiencing the world through the, you know, looking at my roof, and now it's different. And as a writer, there's some economy in that, right? Is that like, I can use the same, I've already described this location. I don't have to describe it again. I've already described how it sounds, how it smells, whereas so much of a writer's job, especially when it comes to world building, is showing the reader, right, this place for the first time. And if over the course of a trilogy, you might have to do that a lot of times to show all these new places. But I think with The Forever Desert, because I'm in the same location, I'm revisiting some of the same things, I can get away with not having to describe something. Instead, it's immediately hitting the reader that I've been here before and something has changed, or it's unfortunately the same.
Yeah. And in that context, do you think circular storytelling might work better in the novella format as opposed to longer stories?
I think everything works better in the novella format.
Novella gang unite!
I mean, I think the more complex a story device, the easier it is to employ at a smaller scale. I think that's like a general truth about the world. The more complex something is, the harder it is to do it like in a grandiose way. And so, of course, there are authors way more talented than I am who could like pull off really tight circular storytelling over 800 pages. I think it's very difficult. And so I think the novella is a great format to take advantage of it.
Yeah, because like, you know, obviously Tolkien is and the Lord of the Rings is like the big example of circular storytelling and the ways in which the hobbits leave the Shire and then they come back to the Shire, like however many hundreds of pages later. But yeah, like I think it is really beneficial for authors out there to think about the format that they want to write in and the ways in which they could employ circular storytelling. Cause do you think it even has to necessarily be, okay, I want to get a little bit meta here. So like,
yeah.
You have like the circular storytelling of a story from start to finish, but what about like circular storytelling of a scene or a chapter? Like,
right.
does it work on that increasingly micro scale?
Like that micro level. Yeah.
I think so. I mean, I think it can, you know, anything can work if you believe in, you know, but like, I mean, really, you know, it's writing, it's magic. Like, you know, if somebody could figure out how to pull off the spell, definitely go for it. I mean, I think it opens up a lot of amazing possibilities. It's tough because like a circle requires a revisiting. So like you need to leave before you return. So if the space is too small, it doesn't feel like you've left, right? Now it's a line story, linear storytelling, whatever shape doesn't need space. But like, you know, I imagine there's some sense of constraint, but I mean, I've seen poem. I mean, there's poem formats where the whole thing hinges on returning, you know, Sestina, right? It's kind of recursive structure. I don't know what extent that's circular. It's like returning to the same refrain over music has a refrain, you know? So yeah, it could definitely operate on small levels. It just maybe has to be thought about and utilized a little differently.
Yeah. Well, kind of diving into the, you know, challenges that might arise when you're using circular storytelling, what are some of the challenges and some of the, you know, benefits, the good things that it offers?
I think kind of, as I mentioned earlier, I think the benefit is like layering of meaning, right? Like an economic creation of meaning. I think the danger is that once you set the precedent, that revisitation can recontextualize or add meaning. Now you have to be very careful to not accidentally revisit, whether it's revisiting certain words. Like you'll see, as you guys have read Aleke, like there are certain phrases that are straight up lifted from book one. I might've also done that accidentally, right? I don't know if I did. I don't think I did. But like, you know, if I accidentally use the phrase that's the same as something I used in book one, which I think most writers, you know, there's some things you repeat. Now you might think, oh, like, there must be some meaning here. There might not be. And so now it just feels sloppy and whatever. It's not English satisfying.
Are losing their minds.
You know, so like, you know, there's that drawback, is that you do have to be very controlled and deliberate with it. Is that if you've told the reader that you will be rewarded for investing in every line, in every scene, then you got to make sure you're not wasting any lines or scenes.
In which case, novellas are very beneficial for that as well.
Yeah. Doing that over like 2 900 page books and not repeating anything inadvertently would be nuts.
All right. Well, let's dig deep into some story fundamentals, but laying out key things to keep in mind when doing circular storytelling, in terms of approaching something like characters and character arcs.
That's good. Yeah, I think, so I'm obsessed with this concept of the character web. I don't know who invented it. I should look it up so I can credit them, but I don't. This idea that and I think this is essential to really, really tight circular storytelling. Every character is in some way an argument on the theme, right? So if your theme is, I'm blanking. What's an example? Like, have you guys seen The Wire? Is that a good example to use? Okay. If your theme is like, you know, the streets are the way they are because of an infinitely complex system of failures from government down to cops on the street or whatever, right? You have characters. Every character is in some way commenting on that. Right? Every character is an argument about that. You have McNulty, who is like, actually, you know, cops are kind of a mess, but also doing their best or whatever. Then you have the senator who's corrupt and is saying like, no, this cycle is important for maximizing profits. And you have a teacher who's saying this cycle degrades our kids. And so by having every character go back to that same core, which, if we're using the circle metaphor, the core, whatever, the dot in the middle, like you generate so much conflict, right? Because now you have two characters who are diametrically opposed to each other philosophically, and they are going to have to interact in the same world of your story. And you have that all across the story, right? I'm just like shooting my fingers out. Radiants, whatever they're called, spokes on a wheel. Like you end up with all these dynamic conflicts and collisions between characters and ideas. And I think like if you really want to have a really tight story that doesn't start to inadvertently repeat and have symbols that could mean something but don't, and just have the story start to collapse, I think that's an important part of it, is having a character work where each character has a purpose and a comment on the central point of your story.
Yeah, because it's like the characters then become integrated more deeply in world building and setting and plot and all these different elements, which are like the other things that I kind of wanted to touch on, if you want to elaborate a bit more on how those kind of, and yeah, I just love how you even use like the circular metaphor for the ways in which people can have opposing points of view. And so they're on opposing points of the circle. And that ultimately is the best way that an author can create tension in a story.
I think so.
Is to just like have those, dichotomies in terms of worldview. But how would world building and setting and plot kind of come into this a bit more?
Yeah. I wish I had something smart to say on those. Let me think. So, well, as you said that, my mind went to, you both read Alec, so like, I think of Hizogye and Lumen as kind of, for me, they were two different arguments on the theme. They're very different characters, and I don't want to spoil it, but like their fundamental views are at their base different. They behave the same often, but it's totally underpinned by totally different worldviews. And I think it creates a lot of tension when they're around each other. I think especially as the book evolves, you start to feel like, what is going on between these two? Like, this is just a lot to deal with. In terms of plot and world building in other ways, I think a similar approach can be valuable, right? Like the plot of your story. So again, this is all stuff I'm stealing from like better storytellers, but like I do think there's value in the plot. Like each part of your plot, each set piece, each conflict, however you want to manage it, like should it again in some way be some comment on the theme, right? If again the theme is this system is corrupt from the top to the bottom, like we should be able to see that almost like at a cellular level. I had a professor who used to talk about like the DNA of the story. Like every DNA in your body contains all of the ingredients to the essential being, right? Like if you extract any DNA, you should know who it is. And I think it's similarly, if you take a conflict from your story, this is ideal. I don't write this well, but like there are people who do, if you take any individual conflict from that story, it should be so, so essential to the fabric of the story and such a commentary on the whole of the story that it could only exist in this story. Like this is where this conflict is meant to be. It's generated from the story and generates the story at the same time. I think it's the same with world building. It's hard to think of this as an example in the moment, but I think it operates essentially the same way. It's like, well, why do you have, I mean, in the Lies of the Ajungo, I have the Palm of Aie, right? Which is this desert plant that when there's no water, it shrivels up, but it persists indefinitely. And when there is a little water, it reveals this whole bush, there's flowers and leaves, and it unfurls this kind of secret that it's been hiding. And like, again, there's probably better ways to do it, but the intent there was to kind of encapsulate the story again in this plant. This plant should represent everything you need to know about the forever desert, which is that when it's deprived and dried out, the secrets are locked up. But if you're able to kind of open it, whether that's with water or in this case, water and the God's eyes and, all the iron, if you're able to open it, there's secrets to unfurl and to examine. There's truth about the world inside of it. Ideally, every aspect of a world building would be equally rigorous. I just get lazy sometimes and don't always do that.
I think it's hard for every writer to approach every single aspect of a story with that much rigor. Obviously, there are some things where it's like you can go much more in depth with it and more tightly integrate it into your theme. I don't necessarily think every single thing.
Yeah, it'd be impossible to put all of it on page if it was everything, you know?
Yeah.
There could be some just a little bit.
It's not the 40s anymore. We can't spend a whole page describing a tree anymore, all right?
True. I think of, like, as I mentioned, I'm an Attack on Titan super fan. I'm also, like, I have a lot of respect for The Wire, because I do think those stories, and I would say, like, I think Memento is very close. The film Memento by Christopher Nolan, like, those get really close to doing it. Where, like, they're just so cohesive and they're so circular in the sense that, like, every tiny part of the story has the whole story kind of wrapped up if you really want to look at it that way. I think Memento is a really clear example of that. I just, like, marvel anytime I encounter those stories, which is often and repeatedly. Like, I'm just blown away by how they were executed. They're amazing.
I think a lot of Christopher Nolan's movies actually achieve very effective sort of circular storytelling. Like, a lot of his movies actually kind of work within that framework. Like
Inception.
Even some of the Batman, like even the Batman movies, right. Batman trilogy is kind of like a grand circle.
It's good. Damn. It's talented dude.
Adrian is just staring off into the distance thinking about Christopher Nolan now.
Just pondering.
I remember when I saw Oppenheimer, I remember like I saw it like once and I saw it again like 2 days later. I was just like, what did I just experience? Because I felt the architecture of it, but I couldn't fully digest it in the first. I mean, there's so much distraction. Like the dialogue is, you barely hear it. It's so loud because the music is loud and the music is all like on rails, just like flying through the film and like never dropping off. And it was just such an experience. And I watched it again. And it's very much what you were just saying. Like he has this incredible control of his narrative and of the circular nature of it. It's really impressive.
Yeah.
So there we go. As students of the circular narrative, maybe we take a look at Nolan. I want to talk about beginnings and endings when we talk, because we've talked about leaving and returning and, you know, that whole, it's central to the topic of the circular storytelling. What's your advice for preparing your beginning to set yourself up well for a punch at the ending, right? For that circle to come back around.
Yeah. That's a great question. I think for most stories, the punch comes from the sense of change. I think even like the human story, if we're going to make it human and cute, like adulthood is wild because of how much you change. When you look at old pictures, you're just like, what? Or you look at young people in general, you go to a high school, you're like, what? You know, like when you see the passage of time, when you're able to see that, it's almost always a gut punch in real life. And so I think a lot of replicating that in fiction is when you're starting off, try to see how far you can get from the ending, whether it's the character's emotional state or geographically. Maybe if it's like a Star Trek type story, you start on Earth, you end up a trillion light years away. You know, like figure out what is the ending? What am I trying to punch them with? Like gut punch them with, not hit them. And like, how far can I get from that at the beginning? You know, in Liza Diadrungo, I knew that I needed to be a bit of a like Mary Sue by the end. He's just this kind of OP sad boy, you know, like he's just been through a lot. And so at the beginning, he's like the most innocent kid. Like he's kind of sad, but that's not a defining character trait. You know, he's just innocent and he's in school and he loves his mom. And by the end, he's just like breaking bones and cracking necks. And so I figured like, you know, what's the most innocent portrayal of that figure I can get? So I was like, yeah, just a little kid in school is getting bullied, right? Like not bullied like in a really mean, cruel way, just like kids are kids. And he's just not wise to the world at all. And so that was kind of how I thought about beginning that.
Yeah, because it's like the way you described him as like OP sad boy is like such perfect anime fodder. Like, it needs to be an anime for that fact alone, that he becomes like an OP sad boy by the end. And he's just like, yeah, I'm just going to fuck everybody up because life, just grief and stuff.
Yeah.
To be fair, he has plenty of reasons to be.
Very legitimate.
To be a sad boy
life,
by the end.
Life is cruel. Life is cruel.
Yeah.
Are there some ways that authors can avoid missing that mark between the beginning ending connection? Like, what are some potential pitfalls that they can fall into between those two points?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's tough. I mean, for me, and I think from what I hear a lot of authors, like, the story has a mind of its own. It really does. It's very unruly. The characters do what they want. And like, there has to be this give and take between you're the author, you're in control, you're in charge, you decide, but also you don't. You know, you need to let it. It's, you know, I don't know how to dance, but I assume it's like dancing, is where like there's a lead and a follow, but it's not that simple, right? It's a communication. And I think like, if you try to dominate your story, you will veer it off path. You cannot fully control a story, at least. Yeah. At the same time, if you just let the characters run amok, Mr. Martin, you end up with a story that's unwieldy. You'll never finish it. You know what I mean? Like, it's great storytelling. It's gorgeous, but like, you can't let them dominate and control because they don't want their stories to end. You know, the world doesn't want to end. It's going to keep talking. So it's, you have to know, and it's very like, just like vibes and sense. I wish I had like a technical way of going about it, but you have to know when to let your story dictate itself and when to pull your story back in. With Lies specifically, I did not plot very much. I wanted a lot of vibes, a lot of desert feels, you know? And so I didn't want to overly populate it with all these beats I need to hit. And I think that's kind of, that made it a little bit easier to get to the end point I wanted to and to start from the beginning I wanted, because then the only things that needed to happen were the things that needed to happen to get to where he needs to get, right? I didn't have to plot out like, oh, but then like the desert dragon comes and I need him to ride the desert dragon because that's sick. And then it's like, okay, but now I got to like force that back into character development instead of just a cool moment, you know? And as opposed to just like kind of an open plot. Initially I had a story of like little kid leaves his desert, like city, and he's out in the desert. That was it. And then I was like, well, how do I get him to OP sad boy? And I was like, I should probably give him some friends that die, right? I should probably give him some truths to learn. Right. Right. Give him a little Rocky. And so, yeah, I think, you know, that exercise of control and letting your story do what it wants.
I like that, because it's all a balance. And this kind of plays into the whole like plotting, pantsing sort of debate. And I think ultimately it's like, even if someone kind of portrays themselves as a plotter or a pantser, I think there's like so much crossover and so much nuance to that.
Yeah.
And I like how you describe it as like the sort of like balance and control, that you don't necessarily let your narrative get out of control on its own, because it will do that.
Right.
But at the same time, you want to give yourself and your narrative enough freedom to flourish in a way that will probably surprise you more than anything.
Yeah.
Because those surprises are just, they're just beautiful moments. Amazing. When it's like, I never would have come up with that had I not just been
at the beginning. Yeah.
Letting this flow. You know what I mean? And maybe that, because you were talking about the different levels of circular storytelling and sort of like the depth that you can get into there, the ways in which different points on the circle are conversing with other points that have already happened or that are coming in the future. And it's kind of like, that is, even if you're not writing a circular story, there are so many ways in which, a story is having a conversation with its past, present, and future all at once.
Right.
And how it's like you're laying the groundwork for future events with foreshadowing, or you're referring to past events with flashbacks or reminiscences, and all these ways in which a story is having a conversation with itself through the context of its characters, I think is, it goes beyond circular storytelling. And, you know, like level two for me is like, is applicable to storytelling in general.
Right.
You know what I mean?
For sure. Yeah. And I say it as a very like pie in the sky person, you know, it's like the whatever, the ideal, but like that, when you have moments of that in a story, like you said, it's magical. It really does feel like magic. I think it's ultimately why I write those little moments. You know, I write because like, I'll tell whatever, but like those moments, writing is very hard, as you both know, it's super hard, but you get these moments of like, that was like a muse. That was like a divine spirit. That was something bigger than me and more complicated and fascinating. And when you're able to capture those moments, it's fuel for like the next 10 years of your life. Like it's so validating and so powerful. And yeah, that only comes from this like striking that balance between control and not control.
I call them my little spirits.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah.
It's like my therapist and I have been like talking about mushrooms and ways in which I've started like incorporating microdosing into my life. And she always asks me like, what have the little spirits been telling you about? and so like, that's fucking brilliant. And I actually wrote it into Mushroom Blues because I love it so much. That's
sick. I love sick. It.
I'm starting that tonight, by the way. I cannot wait. I just finished the book and now I'm like, dude. Mushroom Blues.
Yeah. So I hope you like Freeing Bodies, buddy.
Oh, I can't wait.
As much as MJ.
Oh, yeah. I every time, because I'm reading through the arc that I have, and every time I come across that phrase, I text Adrian, Freeing Body!
Sorry, not sorry.
I cannot wait.
It's like, I'm not sorry at all. Just fucking go with it.
Oh my gosh. Well, to bring this conversation full circle.
Nice.
Damn. You know,
that transition, Adrian.
That was fucking brilliant. That
transition. Thank you. I have my moments. They're rare. to close out for us, what final advice do you have for writers that are looking to consciously incorporate this kind of circular storytelling into their work?
I'm a very theme-driven writer, which I think shows up in my work. I think like there's probably other ways, but for me, I think it centers around the theme. Once you understand what you're trying to say, why you're trying to say it, and you can use that to help spawn the other aspects of your story, have that build a character who disagrees with your theme, a character who perfectly embodies your theme, a character who takes one half of it and rejects the other, and plot and world building. I think that's where you really start to get this, like, kind of what Adrian is saying. Like, it feels even more than a circle. It's like this recursive, like, every part of your story is in conversation with other parts of your story. And it really creates an amazing kind of feeling. So I think theme is the key. There's definitely authors who have probably done it with other perspectives, starting from plot and building that circular, starting from a certain POV. But I really do think at the heart of the story is, like, that's where the circular, that's kind of, if you are going to build a circle, that's what it's got to orbit.
Yeah. Because it's kind of like, it's like the loci that everything kind of goes back to. It's like pinning, like, putting a pin in the middle of a circle and then like string that just kind of like that spin around the whole circle and interact with each other. And at the end of that particular journey, they're still attached to that central loci and they're still in conversation with the theme. And yeah. I love it, man. Damn, dude. You got me thinking in some really brilliant ways.
Yeah.
I'm very thankful.
This is like the most fun convo I've had. Like this stuff burns in my brain at 3 a.m. And I'm like, does it make sense? And so like the fact that I don't sound like, maybe I do sound like a lunatic. Like I appreciate this convo a lot.
I'm literally taking notes right now because of all of what I've like learned during this conversation. And like,
I've been hearing you scribble, MJ.
I know. I'm always like, oh, I gotta remember that for later. So yeah.
All right, brilliant. Well, that's it for this mini masterclass and our two-parter with Moses. Thank you so much for going in circles with us. just chatting about this.
Thank you. This is awesome.
Yeah. As well, if you contribute to our Patreon at $10 more a month, you can hear an exclusive reading by Moses from The Truth of the Aleke, which is out now. Go pick it up. Go read The Lies of the Ajungo, Daughters of Aduma. Fantastic books. And yeah, MJ, you got the beautiful little hardcover of The Lies of the Ajungo.
Oh, yeah, I do. You?
Yeah.
Oh, do you?
Hardcover novellas.
I do.
Yeah. Speaking of circular and reflection and sort of contrast and all that kind of stuff, show off the cover.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Is like such a perfect representation of it.
It's with two.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, I love the artwork for those books. It's so good.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. I posted about them on my TikTok, and that was one of the comments. Actually, I have a shit, check it out. People are so for it.
Oh, that's cool.
Nice.
Yeah. Shout out to Alyssa Winans and Christine Folter. They are cover design wizards.
Alyssa did the artwork for it?
Yeah. Yeah, she does Nevo's too. She's just unreal. Yeah.
I've had Alyssa on the podcast. She's amazing. I'm so happy to hear that she did that.
Track down that interview. No, yeah,
it was an episode 12, which was all about cover art and design. So I had a bunch of like artists and designers that came on and chatted about all that.
Yeah, she's too cool and too good at what she does.
Man, I had no idea that Alyssa did those. I am so happy about that. Shit. I want to get a cover from her someday. That would be a dream.
Yeah, I'm super. It's a privilege, really. When I saw she was tapped to do it, I was like, why? What did I do? I don't deserve this. And she knocks it out of the park every time. I remember when she did Truth. I know we're out of time. Sorry. When she did Truth, I remember like I wasn't fully done writing the book yet. And I was like, that looks more like the book than the book does, right? Like it was perfect. She's unreal. I don't get it.
No, she's incredibly talented.
Yeah.
Damn, man. All right, Moses, where can folks find you online?
I am at MosesOsetOtomi.com. I'm also on all the social medias. Just Google Moses Osetotomi and you'll see where I'm at.
Awesome. You can also follow SFF Addicts on Instagram, Twitter, Threads, Blue Sky, all that jazz at SFF Addicts Pod. And you can follow me at Adrian M. Gibson. MJ, what about you?
Yeah, you can find me all those same places, plus TikTok at MJ Kuhn Books, or just find me at mjkuhn.com. And as I always forget to say, but I'm going to remember this time, if you sign up for my newsletter, you get a free novella or novelette. So please do that.
And then go get the books. Go get the babies.
And then, and if you're like, wow, I like how this broad writes, then you can buy my books that aren't free.
Great use of the word broad.
Thank you. I'm just embodying, like, what is that, like a 1950s guy.
Right.
A sham wizard, a golden dawn.
Yeah.
Right. A hot new jam.
Extra.
Oh, fuck. All right. Oh, now, on that beautiful note, keep reading, keep imagining, and we'll see you next time on SFF Addicts.